You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
And then even the first few years of practice, I had a really tough job right off the bat. I worked in hospital medicine, so really sick people that are in the hospital. And it was hard, and I got ground up a bit. And I think that this is the thing that dog people know, is that thump of the tail, that when you step home after your day's labors and there is that creature there that doesn't care about all of the rest of the stuff that's out there. They just want you, and they want to go for a walk, and they want to, you know, be with you. Like, I've had dogs my whole life, but training with a dog, because I didn't train him. We trained together, right? Like, we went on that journey together. And we built each other together. We trained together, you know, and that the depth of relationship that you get with that is beyond anything else.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I am truly thankful to all of you listeners of this podcast and hope you're able to spend some time this week with your families and your dogs and maybe even get out for a hunt. But after you've had that big Thanksgiving Day meal, be sure to tune into the National Dog Show presented by Purina immediately following the Macy's Day Parade from 12 to 2 p.m. I had a great time working that event this past week in Philadelphia, and I'm grateful to be part of and promote a company that supports us, the breeders, enthusiasts, the clubs and events that we participate in, the Canine Health Foundation, as well as several conservation organizations. Fuel your dogs with the best, Purina Pro Plan. As I'm looking out the window at the snow falling, I'm excited to get out for some pheasant hunting this week. I realize I'm getting a bit low on my pheasant load, and lucky timing for me, as Boss 5s were in stock, so I got some ordered. There are 20, 12, and 28 gauge 5s all in stock right now. Boss is on the grind, pumping out shells and updating their website every morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. The inventory typically ends in less than an hour from posting, so head over to BossShotShells.com and buy non-tox copper-plated bismuth that ships direct to consumer. If you have a new shotgun on your Christmas list, or you're planning to put one under the tree for that special lady in your life, don't make the mistake of buying her one that doesn't fit. Take her to one of the 19 Siren Shotgun Demo Centers in the U.S. to let her try it out and decide what feels best and fits. Go to SirenUSA.com and find a demo center closest to you. Buy your dog a new kennel for Christmas this year. They deserve the unparalleled protection that Dakota 283 is dedicated to providing for our dog's travel. Easy to grab, built-in handle, locking door, and the option of FDA-safe antimicrobial protection of Dakota Guard. Use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. Patreon members had early access to this episode this morning with the uncut video version. And in honor of my senior dog Bisto's upcoming 13th birthday, I did a senior dog giveaway exclusively on Patreon. And the winner of that is Meg Eden and her 16-and-a-half-year-old German wire hair pointer, Maddie. Because all senior dogs deserve to be celebrated, I'm sending everyone that entered a bag of dog treats, a coupon for ProPlan dog food, Bird Dog Babe sticker, and a 2022 Mike McCartney calendar. Thanks for entering, and thank you so much for supporting this podcast. My guest today is Katie Willis. Katie grew up big game hunting in Montana, then found herself in the wetlands and uplands with the addition of her first bird dog 13 years ago, a German wire hair pointer affectionately referred to as Bird Dog. BD was there by her side through undergrad and medical school, and during those long nights studying, Katie continued to remind Bird Dog of her promise to take him rooster hunting in North Dakota. A four-week trip with a loyal best bird dog and two exuberant puppies made some unforgettable memories for Katie and her crew. All right, let's get after it. Welcome to the podcast, Katie Willis.
Hello!
You are joining us from where tonight?
I am in Bend, Oregon, in my little kitchen living room area.
And so. Where are the dogs at?
I have the world's best bird dog underneath this table here, and then a pair of Muppets practicing to be good dogs in the living room on their own little beds. They're practicing.
So in my notes, I have common name, the Northern Brown-Haired Wanderer.
I was, Bird Dog and I, my old man and I went, we had a 4-month sabbatical between jobs a couple years ago. And we went on this 4-month, 7,000-mile road trip. I called it our almost tour. We almost got to Mexico. We almost got to Canada. But I was doing a ton of birding at the time. And so I was kind of obsessed with like genus and species names, you know, like all these different genus and species names. So I decided to give us genus and species names. So I'm Brunetus girlii, which is the Northern Brown-Haired Wanderer. And Bird Dog is Birdus Doggo, the silken-eared biscuit eater, which is funny because he's a black wire hair that's super smooth. And so a lot of people will ask me, they're like, oh, is that like a black lab mix? Has that got some healer in it? Because he's kind of got a blue merle color to him. And so it was really funny because I'd be like, oh, no, he's a silken-eared biscuit eater. And people would be like, oh, wow, I've never heard of that before. I was like, very rare breed. Very, very rare breed.
You're so convincing, though. When you when you talk, and like, which is a really interesting pair for me because I am like the most gullible person in the planet. So when you look me in my face all the time and you like just tell me these things, like I'm just swarmed with, oh, wow. Yeah, really?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Exactly. Silken-eared biscuit eater. I've never heard of that before.
I've never heard of that one before.
Very handsome.
It sounds amazing. So, Katie, tell listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do. Give us your elevator pitch.
I am a standard issue brown-haired girl of English-Irish descent. I was raised in Montana and grew up there. I've been in Oregon for the past 21 years. I actually was brought here by a tornado when I was 21. I was living in Texas and working at this restaurant, making a ton of money. And I had gone on a river trip in Oregon. And one of the guides was like, you should come be a river guide. And he called me up. He's like, you should come be a river guide. And I was like, I'm making tons of money down here in Texas. I'm doing great. And then this tornado destroyed the restaurant I worked at. I was out of a job, so I moved to Oregon.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it's super bizarre. But anyhow, so I've been in Bend for 21 years now. I've done a lot of different jobs while I was here. But most currently, I'm a physician assistant working at one of the local clinics here. And that's what I do. And when I'm not there, I just try to spend all my time outside with my dogs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Name some of the jobs that you've all had besides river guide, physician's assistant.
I've been a river guide. I was a ski patroller. I worked at a bunch of different bike and ski shops. I've delivered and merchandised beer. I worked construction. I worked on golf courses. I set, one of my first jobs was setting at a trap and ski club. So I've done that. I've been an EMT. So I've worked in the emergency department as an EMT. I've done landscaping. I helped build a straw bale house one time. Just kind of a lot of different stuff.
You went to school to be a physician's assistant later on in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't start college, my undergrad until I was 28. So I was kind of running around for most of my 20s before I settled down and started getting to school.
What was that transition like from going from a river guide, ski patrol to going, oh, I want to take care of people?
Well, so I had, with ski patrol in river guiding, I had gotten my EMT and I really liked medicine. Like I always loved it when we had first aid courses. I loved that sort of stuff. And I had been guiding for, I think, 6 seasons and ski patrolling for 2. And I was 27, 28. And I was like, man, my like back hurts. Like my back hurts. And I just kind of was like, okay, you know, you can't do this till you're 40, right? Like you can't do this till you're 40. You're going to have to come up with something else to do. And so I was interested in medicine. And so I just kind of decided that I would try to break off a little chunk because it just seemed like such a big thing to do. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine the idea of going to school that long because I couldn't get out of high school fast enough. Like I could not get out of high school fast enough. I was completely convinced when I left high school that I was never going to go back to school. I did not have a good time there. So here in Bend, we have this community college and you can take your first 2 years of courses at the community college for like a third of the cost. And then they transfer. They have this block transfer agreement with the university. So I was like, okay, well, just why don't you just try to get your associate's degree? And then I got my associate's degree. And then I got my bachelor's degree. And then I applied for and got into PA school. And then I went to PA school. And 7 years later, I was like, holy cow, I went to a lot of school. But I just kind of broke it off in those little chunks, so it didn't seem as insurmountable.
Mm-hmm. I love all the things that you do. And after spending time with you, I mean, you really are a very, very intelligent person. And it's fun to just run random thoughts and ideas off of you because you always have an answer. You always have a solution. And it's like, it comes to you like this. Things that I can sit there and ponder on for hours, sometimes days. You're like, oh yeah, well, what, just a blah.
Yeah, it's pretty. I've got a buddy named Jerry, and I was like, we were like having dinner, and I was just rambling about something, and he leaned over to me and put his palm of his hand right on my forehead like this, and he was like, "What is going on in there?" I was like, "That's a pretty good descriptor of like what's usually going on."
Are you up all night thinking?
No, I'm an excellent sleeper. Okay. I am actually, people talk about what a good sleeper I am. Like it's pretty remarkable. Like I decide to go to bed and I start brushing my teeth and sometimes I will fall asleep before I even like finish brushing my teeth. And when I'm out, I'm out. Like I don't roll over. I don't move. I'm out. Mm-hmm. Which is, now that I work in sleep medicine a little bit and I listen to people talk about how bad their sleep is. And I'm like, wow. Won the lottery on that one. So no, it doesn't, maybe my brain just exhausts itself all day. And so then when it's time for bed, it's like, okay, time for bed. So
it's like complete shut off then.
It's just complete shut off, like complete shut off. Yeah.
You're fortunate then.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's go back to the Montana thing. Where in Montana did you grow up?
I was born in Missoula Community Hospital. And we initially grew up, where we lived in a little town called Alberton, which is just 30 miles west of Missoula. My parents ran a full service gas station mechanic repair shop, which was pretty sweet. I didn't realize at the time how lucky I was. Like we didn't go to a babysitter or have like a babysitter until I was like 7 or 8 years old. We were just with our parents and like, who gets that? Like how fortunate am I that my parents really, our parents, I've got two great sisters. That like we really just had these phenomenal parents that just worked really hard and loved us so much. And then we moved to Helena. So we lived in Helena for a few years. And then we ended up in Idaho for a couple of years. And then my parents split up and my dad and I moved back to Montana. And then eventually my two sisters came over too. So
your dad, he hunted big game quite a bit, right?
Yeah, that was definitely one of his things that he loved. And he just loved Montana. He was British. So he grew up in England. And yeah, my dad was British, which is actually really interesting in that his family for many generations were the gamekeepers for the Marquis of Ripon, which is like a lorded landed gentry. And so his grandfather's job was to make sure that no one poached pheasants and that there were always deer and pheasants for the marquee to hunt with his friends. And so he grew up with hunting all around him and not being able to do it, which I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because, and I think it's why, like, he actually met my mom in Australia My mom is not Australian. My mom is from Montana. That's another podcast. That's a big podcast out there, but they ended up back in Montana. And I think he just like, I mean, he was in love with Montana. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just like having grown up in such a restricted area where everything was owned. And if you weren't born into money, you weren't going to get into money. And like you really, there was a class system. And he used to talk about that. And it was interesting because he loved Montana. He loved America. And he just was so proud of, you know, the things that we talk about, you know, like when we were out, it's like public lands, right? Like if you grew up in Montana or you grew up in America and especially in the West, you have no idea what public lands are. I mean, you do because they're always there. But growing up with him, it was so obvious how sacred that is. To be able to write your own check, right? Like he wanted to own his own business. He owned his own business. He, you know, he did all these things that he wouldn't have been able to do in England. But the biggest thing that he could do is he could drive his pickup truck up into the woods and he could walk wherever he wanted to. And we used to walk. We hiked and hiked so much. And I think it was just the pleasure of him putting his feet on ground that like, that didn't belong to anybody, and that freedom in that was really, that's really special. Like you don't think about it, right? But it's like really special. So yeah, so he was a big game hunter. Elk were definitely like, that was his jam. Like he was an elk hunter and he lived for elk hunting, him and his buddies. And I can remember the first time I ever shot a gun. I was 6 or 7 years old and it was my dad's 30-06 and he did all of his own reloading. And we were out with his buddy, Joe Becker, and Joe smoked camels and drove a giant yellow Blazer, like this giant yellow, like 1970s Blazer. It was awesome. And so we were out with Joe and he'd driven his big yellow Blazer out and we were out at this little gravel pit. There was a picnic bench and they're sighting in their rifles. And I'm like, dad, I want to do it. Like, dad, let me do it. Like, I want to shoot. And he would always come up with these really clever ways of saying no to me because I don't hear no well. And he's like, oh, Katie, we can't, like, we don't have any earplugs for you. Like, you can't. And his buddy Joe is like, I got an idea. And he digs into the ashtray and he shoves spent camel cigarette butts in my ears.
No way.
Cigarette butts into my ears. And I sit on this picnic table and I can remember, and he had a gun rest. So he, you know, we cradle the aught-six in the gun rest and he, you know, tuck my little shoulder up against that. And, you know, he's like, here's your, you know, get your crosshairs, get it all lined up and then just give it a little squeeze. And I gave it a little squeeze and I remember him catching me as I came off that picnic table, like off that picnic bench from that aught-six. But yeah, I'd have been like 6 or 7 years old. And it was probably the summer before he took me hunting for the first time ever. Okay. And that fall he took me elk hunting. And it was like, I can remember, I mean, that memory is so clean to me that I'm fairly certain I could take you to where we had lunch. And I packed my own lunch and I packed my own teddy bear. I don't know why I thought I needed a teddy bear. I packed my teddy bear. I was embarrassed because my long johns, my long underwear had flowers on them. And I just didn't feel like real hunters wore flowers on their long johns. But we were in Helena, Montana, and it was cold and clear. And we were up at like 4 in the morning and we walked outside and it was you know this about Montana, right? Where it's like when it's in the winter and it's that dry, cold air and the stars are like glass. They're so bright. And I remember looking up at this black night with these stars so bright when he helped me get into the pickup truck. And I was like, oh yeah, this is on. Like, I remember just being like, yeah, this is the best. I grew up doing that big game hunting. He unfortunately passed away when I was 23 living here in Oregon. And part of what that ended up with is like with me having the guns, right? So now all of a sudden I had the rifles and everything that I'd left at his house. And I started trying to big game hunt here in Oregon. And it was just hard. Oregon has a pretty limited season and it's really hard to get a draw and it's super competitive. And it just was this whole thing where it's like, man, if you don't get the right weekend off, like you don't get to go elk hunting. It was about that same time I was guiding and I was running around with some guys and they bird hunted and they took me bird hunting and I shot a duck with them. And then we did a little bit of quail chasing and I was like, God, this is awesome. Like, this is awesome. This goes from September to the end of July. This is where it's at. And then I went out one time without them because I wanted to go and they were not available. I went out and I posted up on the side of this like little wetlands and I knocked down a pair of ducks. And those will go down in history as the two most expensive ducks of all time because I never found them. I never found those ducks. And now I'm what, like 10 grand deep into bird dogs. And so mm-hmm. they're like $5,000 a piece, each of those ducks.
Yeah, you realize the importance of bird recovery then.
Yeah, yeah.
So what kind of dogs did your friends have?
They had labs. Gunny Gunster was, dear departed Gunny, we lost him about a year or so ago, was, holy cow, he was a hell of a dog. He was awesome. I loved Gunny. He was a black lab. But yeah, so I mean, because that was the whole thing, like growing up with Dad is like, he was like, you never took a shot that wasn't a kill shot. There were no sort of off the hip, off the cuffs, like, you know, and rarely did we ever have to track, but it was this thing, right? Like there was this huge responsibility to what you did, right? Like, and we shot rifles, we sighted rifles in and we shot rifles all summer long and you had to be dialed in. Like if you weren't dialed in, you weren't going. You know, and he wanted you to know like your 100-yard, your 200-yard, your 300-yard shots and how you were going to adjust to him because it was like there was no wasting of game. And I mean, he just had a lot of integrity and he's a really ethical man. But I think this probably goes back to that same upbringing in England, right, where you weren't allowed to have anything. Right. And so if you ever got the opportunity to have something, you better be really responsible about it. Mm-hmm. But I felt like hell. I mean, I was out there in my waders looking for those ducks for hours. Wow. I didn't know at that point in time that if you wing a duck, they'll swim down and drown themselves out of sheer spite. I didn't know that they did that. And so that's probably what happened. But yeah, so I wanted a dog and I started looking at dogs. I had a friend who had a short hair that I liked that didn't hunt, but I kind of liked the way he moved.
Okay.
And that got me into like, there's more in the world than labs. And I started looking around and looking at different breeds. And at that point in time, I was skiing a ton. So I was skiing, ski patrolling when I first started looking for dogs. And so I was like, I need something with a double coat. Like it has to be like a short hair is not going to do it. A Vizsla's not going to do it. A Weimaraner is not going to do it. But by the same token, I also at that point in time had a St. Bernard. So that was the dog that I was living with then is I had this amazing, luscious, wonderful St. Bernard, but he was long haired and there was a lot of coat maintenance. And he wasn't actually that good in the snow either because he would get all balled up in his feet and under his armpits. And it was just like, he just, you know, he loved snow. Don't get me wrong. That guy loves snow.
Yeah. They're made for that.
They're made for it. But like, as far as like trekking in the snow, like he struggled. So, so I originally was kind of interested in the coats and things like that. And then I grew up with, we had horses. And then I forgot to mention this. I was a trail guide for riding stables.
Really?
Yeah. So I was a trail guide for a riding
stables. Wait, in Montana or?
No, here in Oregon. In Oregon. It was my first job in Oregon. I worked down in Sun River. I showed up and they gave me my guide horse for the season. And I wasn't originally super stoked. It was the prettiest paint pony you have ever seen. He was gorgeous and he was a f-ing idiot. Like he had been so bred to be this, like, it was like the only thing anybody cared about was the aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And his name was Kino. And he came with the name Kino. Mm. And then people would be like, why is your horse's name Kino? And I'd be like, cause this is a gamble every time I get on this thing. he would lose his mind and he could almost gallop side passing.
Wow.
And it was so sketchy. It was scary. So sketchy. It was so sketchy. And he was just like, you would see him, like he'd roll those eyes up into the back of his head and and the horses I'd grown up with were these bomb-proof mountain horses. I mean, shit, my dad shot his last elk, like, literally off his horse, right? Like, Wow. Like, I can't remember if he even dismounted, but he was within a foot of that horse when he shot his last cow elk. Mm-hmm. And that horse didn't budge. They just didn't. And so this guy was like, I was like, what are you? You know, there's smart and there's pretty. And if you can get both, it's the best. But if you can only pick one, there's one that's more important. There's one that's so much more important. And so when one of the things that really attracted me to the wire hair was there's kind of a pretty good breadth and width of appearance. Mm-hmm. Like there's obviously the wire hair and what right. everyone's going for. But there's a little bit more wiggle room in that as far as like, you know, the coat length, you know, they can be black, they can be white, they can be solid liver, they can be roan, they can have a lot of beard, they can have not a lot of beard, right? Like, I mean, and some of that's just the genetics of having, you know, a newer, you know, in the realm of versatile hunting dogs, it's kind of a newer dog where you're kind of working through that. And there are these classic mm-hmm. German wire hairs. But when you look at a lot of different wire hairs, that doesn't seem to be as high on the list as some of the other characteristics. And so I'm like, yeah, I want a dog that's being bred for toughness, for stamina, for hardiness. Like I cook exclusively in cast iron because I break like half of everything I touch. Like I am really hard on things. And so I'm like, I need a dog that is tough. Mm-hmm. And that can really roll with me. And so that's what really attracted me to the wire hair. A lot of stuff I know about them that is why they'll be mine for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I mean, it was your first bird dog breed.
My first bird dog breed.
And you're just going to be addicted to them.
Yeah. I mean, and it's one of those things where like, I'll put a big disclaimer on this talk, right? Like we're going to talk a lot about bird dogs and my bird dogs. And I do have the world's best bird dog. And I think wire hairs are the best bird dog ever. That's for me personally. Like I think that's for me.
I'm not going to necessarily disagree with you. So maybe this podcast isn't for everybody that doesn't own wire hair.
In my world, in the sphere that is Katie Willis, there will never be another bird dog that's as good as a wire hair. But having said that, I hunted last weekend over an amazing short hair who tracked a cripple that I shot that we would have never found. She smoked it. It was nice. Awesome. And like when I was out in North Dakota, I had never hunted with a setter before. And I got to hunt with this woman named Emily and her setter. Yeah. And holy shit, that dog, like her dog Riggins, I was like, this is a lights out bird dog.
Right.
And so like, yeah, like I definitely, and like you hang out at NAVDA events and you get to meet all sorts of different dogs and different puppies and man, you can't go wrong with a good bird dog. I mean, like legit, hands down, I don't care which bird dog you got. It's great. They're just great dogs
right.
because of everything
right.
that they've got going on. But man, for me, it's the wire hair, right? Like they remind me of me. Like they're stubborn, they're opinionated. They just like to do their own thing, but they're super loyal and like,
totally.
And they're always paying attention. Like they see things and they're goofy and they're super keen. Yeah. They're super keen. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, so it's definitely wire hairs for me. They got me.
So you say that you won the bird dog lottery. So talk a little bit about how you went into the process of getting your first wire hair and the breeder and why you won the lottery there.
So I started looking around and I was like, okay, this is the wire hair. Like I was like, I'm pretty certain this is what I want. And what was really interesting is I actually talked to a couple wire hair breeders that tried to talk me out of wire hairs. And that's just kind of maybe another trait that I share with wire hairs is like, once I've decided that I want something, telling me that I can't have it or shouldn't have it doesn't deter from what I want. It mm-hmm. actually kind of like makes it more. So when, you know, when I talk to a wire hair breeder and they're like, no, this is too much dog for a first time dog owner. Like you've never had a bird dog before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Watch me. Like, and you know, and so I called around and you know, I talked to a bunch of people, talked to a lot of awesome breeders. but ended up getting a hold of this guy, Kelly Jobes at Bone Point Kennels. And he and his dad raised these wire hairs. And they were in Baker City. At that point in time, Kelly had just, he had just finished school and he'd gotten his first job. And he was actually working outside of Portland somewhere. And so I was going on a fishing trip over to the coast. And I was just like, dude, can I just like show up at your house? And I showed up at his house and he had a pair of wire hairs. And the male he had, Reggie, was the stuff of legends. Reggie was like classic wire hair. And then he had this little female named Allie. And I just was in love with her. I mean, I just... She was a little package with a lot of heart, and she just was a phenomenal dog. And so I was like, yeah, Kelly, I want a dog from you. It's funny because I've asked him since then, I'm like, why did you sell me that dog? And he's like, honestly, I don't know. He's like, because I probably wouldn't sell you. I wouldn't sell a person with that story a dog because you just, everybody was probably right. Like you didn't really know what you were getting into. And I think that that's the second half of winning the bird dog lottery. So I got this pup from him, this little black baby wire hair. He quickly outsmarted me. It is amazing how smart he came just out of the box.
The first day.
Because I was thinking about this, you know, like we're getting ready for this podcast. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to get on there and you're going to tell everybody in the world that you have the world's best bird dog. And I'm like, you probably better think about, like, you better be able to back your play. And describe what that means. And I think what it is about him in particular is his level of intelligence and his memory and his pattern recognition. Like the pattern recognition software that he came loaded with is pretty phenomenal. But yeah, the first night I brought him home, I got home, I'd been out deer hunting in Eastern Oregon and I shot a little buck. And then I went up to Baker City and picked up my puppy. And man, I drove back into Bend feeling, I mean, like I had a bird dog puppy in my lap. I had a muley buck in the back of the truck. I was feeling pretty high on the hog. I was like,
things are pretty good.
I was 29 years old and I was rolling thick. It was the first week of October, man. I was like, yeah, this is it. Yeah. So I got home and like, you know, went inside for just a half a heartbeat with the puppy and then went out into the backyard. I had the shed and I hung up the deer and I was living in downtown Bend and there was this vacant lot a couple blocks away. I walked the dogs there. And so the St. Bernard hadn't had a leash or a collar in 10 years. And so it didn't even occur to me that with your brand new baby bird dog, you should probably have a leash and a collar. And I walked the puppy and I got down to the vacant lot in like 10 o'clock at night, it's pitch black, and looked down. And there's no damn puppy next to me. The puppy is gone. And I was like, oh my God, I just lost my brand new baby bird dog. Like, oh my, like no one's going to give me this back. Like no one that finds this puppy is going to like respond to an ad. I mean, he was so cute. Mm-hmm. And I screamed and screamed and yelled and yelled and yelled. And I was super upset. And finally I was just like dejectedly, like head hung, walk back to my house. And I get kind of close to my house and I can hear him yiping. And I run up and there on the front porch on the door that he has walked through one time in his entire life is that little dog. And he is wedged into that door, scratching and screaming to be let into a house that he was in for all of 3 minutes.
Wow.
And it's stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. like I've taken him hunting places that like we hunted once and then like didn't come back to for 5 years. And you're like putting his collar on the back of the tailgate and he's looking around and he's like, oh yeah, I remember where I found birds. I remember being here. And you put him on the ground and he would immediately go directly to the first place he found birds the last time he was there.
Wow.
And would do the same thing, like a place that he's never been before, but it kind of looks like a place he's been. And he's like, it's like, I bet you that coulee that looks like it's got water in it, I bet you there's birds in there. And he would just... So he just had this innate intelligence, which was phenomenal, but it was also really hard. He really knew what was going on. And so, you know, the first part of the bird dog lottery that I won is my breeder. He's just phenomenal. He is an engineer. His brain is a spreadsheet and like, he just is checking the boxes, right? Like he does his homework and he breeds a hell of a dog. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is that there was a woman living here in Bend at the time. Her name was Melissa Hers, And she raised small Munster Landers, which is a really great bird dog also. I have a big place in my heart for small Munster Landers. But she raised small Munster Landers and she trained bird dogs. That was her job. She had a property and that's what she did. And I kind of figured out I was in way over my depth. And I had met her at a trade show. She had basically sort of decided she wanted a bird dog and had gone through a similar process of like zero experience, but knowing that she wanted something. And so she'd gotten her first SM. And at that point in time, she was like a senior judge for NAVDA. Like she had done the whole, you know, the whole show. And and so I think that she was just like, yeah, like nobody gets to tell you what you can or cannot do. And so I just was like, hey, like I need some help. Like I'm kind of lost. I've been reading these books. I look online, you know, I don't really understand some of this stuff. Like, when do you need the barrel? And she's like, you don't need a barrel. You have a 9-month-old puppy.
So at that age with the wire hair, they're testing you. Mm-hmm. They're totally defiant mm-hmm. and stubborn and trying to really find their place.
Yeah. And what the other part of it is that my first hunting dog's name is Colt.
Yeah. But I'm like, we need to define that.
We need to find this. So my
he does have first, a common name.
Yeah. My first hunting dog's name is Colt. After I started bird hunting over him and saw like, it just, he became the bird dog. So people would be like, oh, what's up? I was like, oh, me and the bird dog, me and the bird dog. And it just got shortened to bird dog. And then it just got shortened to BD. Mm-hmm. And so when he's in trouble, I can yell Colt and he will snap his head around. But so does everybody else around because they're like, who the hell are you yelling at? Like nobody knows his name's Colt. He does. So bird dog, which is, again, I'm like on the Bird Dog Babe podcast talking to people who have tons of bird dogs. And I'm like, yeah, like what kind of hubris do I have that I'm like, oh yeah, I have the world's best bird dog. He's so great. I named him Bird Dog.
To be fair, I've met him and he is probably one of the world's best bird dogs.
He's pretty great. Yeah.
He's pretty great.
Yeah. And so I went out there and I was just like, hey, I don't, you know, like I don't even need to do anything with my dog. I just want to watch you work. Like I'll set pigeons, I'll clean coops, I'll just do whatever it is. I just want to kind of watch. She was like, oh yeah, come on out. And I started going out there. You know, we'd load up her trailer with, you know, the 6 dogs she was training and we'd throw bird dog in one of the boxes and we'd work through the process. And it was really interesting because he had up to that point in time, he is fast. He's so fast. So he had been catching game. I think the first thing that he caught was a rock chuck. At 1 a.m. I was at the bar and I'd been having some beers, some beverages. Mm-hmm. While I'm walking home from the bar with my puppy. He's trotting along and there's this like...
Was he at the bar with you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. My dogs always used to go to the bar with me. You know, there was
on
one
a leash?
Bird dog had to be on a leash because he would okay. wander off. But the St. Bernard never needed a leash. Like he used to sleep underneath the pool table at this one bar that we went to. He's a good boy. But yeah, bird dog, you got to keep on a leash. But anyhow, so we're walking home from the bar. Got my puppy. I clearly had not learned my previous lessons and I do not have him on a leash. And I'm just wandering down this alley. There's a street light. So there's a little bit of light and there's like a 3 or 4 foot high chain link fence. And I can see on the other side of the chain link fence, there is this giant marmot, like Marmota flaviventris, a yellow-bellied marmot. We call them rock chucks here. And puppy stiffens up, you know, he's watching. And I'm just like, oh, what are you going to do? It's on the other side of the fence. Like, And he takes off at that rock chuck and he leaps. And is up over that fence, taps his back feet on the top bar of the fence and lands on that rock chuck and shakes it to death in about a second and a half.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, like, and I was just like, oh my God. And like Kelly,
how old was he?
He was like 7 months old. Wow. The rock chuck was bigger than he was. Like, and then he came back over the fence with the rock chuck. And I'm like, what am I going to do with this rock chuck? Like, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, Jesus Christ. And what was funny is because Kelly had told me about wire hairs and cats. And we had a cat mm-hmm. that had beaten the hell out of the puppy when he first showed up. So he hadn't bothered cats. And I was like, holy cow, if he can do that to a rock chuck, if he ever got his lips on a cat, like it's, I mean, he could just turns everything into like a fur wrapped bag of Jello. And it was, but yeah, then it was on, like he was catching mice. Every time we went into the forest, he had a chipmunk, ground squirrels, like big gray squirrels. Like he hunted for himself and he figured out very early that he could. And then like the rock chuck was like the first thing he brought back to me. And it was the last thing. Like after that, it was like, he was like, this is mine. And I don't need you. I don't need anything else. And so like when we went out training, it was pretty obvious that he was hunting for himself. He did not even care I was there, you know? And it was like, we did our first NAVDA test. It was, I mean, he smoked the field. He had a great day in the field. I had not really done much with the tracking, but he wasn't having it. He didn't want to track at all. You know, he kind of was a little bit interested in the feather pile. And then he picked his head up and he looked across this road at the field that we had done the field search in. And he was just gone. Like he was just gone. He was out there cleaning the whole field of chucker. He didn't. And I was screaming my head off. And like, I went and got him like three times before the judges told me to like leash your dog. You know, and then he did great. He did great in the water. He got a prize three, but it was like a low prize three. It was not great. So that was Memorial Day weekend. And then it was like after that I sought out Melissa and I was like, okay, it's on. We trained all that summer and I kind of was able to get him a little bit reined in by that fall for hunting season, but he still was primarily hunting for himself and you were just kind of lucky to get along with him. And then Melissa helped me force fetch him, which was hard. Force fetching is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard.
Well, and especially with a stubborn, hard-headed, independent dog.
Yeah. I'm glad that we did it because it took us probably 6 months of force fetching and just really, I mean, it was hard. Like,
wow.
I used to have to kennel him outside, you know, like he'd been a house dog. It'd just be like, no, like you are being such a complete shit. You're going to go outside and you're going to live outside and you're going to live in a kennel and you're going to have a dog house. And you get to, and that's where you'll eat and you can come out for training and you can come out for exercise and then you can be in the kennel because you need to learn where you exist in this world.
Good for you.
But he would do stuff.
Yeah.
It's like the perception part of like what makes him so brilliant, you know? So you're doing hold and carry. So you put the bumper in his mouth and you're walking around, you know, and you could walk in a straight line with him and with that bumper in his mouth for 6 hours and he'd never do anything. The second that I decided that I wanted to change direction, it almost happened at exactly the same moment. Like whether I had a way that I shifted my weight just before I changed direction or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the second that I started changing my direction, he would look the opposite direction and he could spit a bumper 8 feet. And so he would hold that bumper in his mouth for hours, hours and hours and hours. But the second that your attention deviated, like your shoulder just moved a little bit out of being able to completely control him, he would just look over his shoulder and just spit a bumper. Like 8 feet, you know, and then, so then you got to go and you got to go get it and you got to force it back in his mouth and, you know, and so it was just really hard, but we got through it in a pretty epic event.
Was he not crated in your house before that? Was he just kind of a free range spoiled dog?
Well, no, he was crated in the house when I wasn't there.
Okay. But so when he was home, he was out.
When we were home, he was out. Also, I think one of the things that had kind of ruined it at that point in time is I was working this job as an ER tech in the emergency department at the hospital. I would work these 7 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. shifts. And so I would come home at 7:45 in the morning and I'd walk the dog. And if I let him sleep in the bed with me, he would be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
If I put him in the crate, he would cry.
This story is so familiar to 1,000 other puppy stories I've ever heard.
Yeah. And so I would just be exhausted, so right?
Then, like, right. You don't want to deal with it.
And I'd just be like, I'd be like, oh my God, I just need like 3 hours of sleep. Like I've been up all night, and I would work these like three night shifts, like back to back. And I would just be like, okay, fine. Just get up here. And he would burrow in. It was funny because the cat didn't like him at first. And so I would be sleeping there in my bed, and on one side of me would be the cat curled up, and the other side would be the puppy, and the puppy would put his head on my belly. And the cat would reach his claws out, and he had these amazing giant knife-like claws, and he would just roll them on my abdomen, and he would hold his claws out right off the puppy's nose. Like, go ahead, cross this girl. I dare you. And I would just be like, oh, I don't care. I just got to go to bed. And then it's always funny because, my first ever utility test on my first ever bird dog, I got a prize one. I think it was a 198 prize one. And everyone's always like, wow, what an achievement. And I'm like, yeah, it was, but he essentially got professionally trained. Like I spent.
But you did all the work though. You did the work too.
I did. Yeah. I spent 5 days a week, 5 to 7 days a week.
Wow.
At a bird dog kennel. Right.
Sure.
Like, yeah, like it is quite an achievement, and we had a great run, and it was so much fun, and I'm very proud of him, and he's a very good bird dog, and he still is a prize one utility. I know that I could take him out there and he'd still do all the right things. Like he's got it in him. But I was at an Ames and Rules clinic this spring, and the guy who was running it was like asking everybody what they did. And I was like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, I got a prize three, and then I got a prize one. And he's like, first bird dog ever. And he's like, yeah. He's like, what an achievement, young lady. And I was like, first off, not that young. And also, like, I had a professional trainer, right? Like, I worked one-on-one with a professional trainer, right? Like, I love NAVDA and I love bird dogging, and the bird dog community is really wonderful and supportive. And I do love all of the people that are getting into it, and especially a lot of women that are getting into bird dogging. And that's what I would just say is, like, find a mentor, you know, find somebody that you can talk to and that you feel comfortable with, and then just enjoy it, right? Like, just enjoy it, because your puppy is going to run like his hair is on fire across a field, and you're going to be screaming after him. And like, there is no one that you talk to that has ever done anything with bird dogs that doesn't have a stack of stories about all the times their dogs made him look like an idiot in front of people. Mm-hmm. And like, life is stressful enough in all of our other various work and sundry tasks. Training and hunting and being with your bird dog should be a good time. And if you can't like roll your head back and squint at the sun and laugh at like your puppy, like just like, because, you know, they're just, it's just, and it should just be fun. It should just be fun.
I love that, because I think sometimes we just get too caught up with watching all the other perfect dogs out there and, and comparing ours to theirs, and mine should be doing this by now. And, you know, just taking it too seriously.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also one of those things where it's like, everything exists on a spectrum. I've tested a couple puppies this year, and I tested my little male puppy 2 weekends in a row, and I did a Versatile Hunting Dog Federation test, and he refused to point, and he just like ran down Chucker and chomped them like it was like his goal in life was to just chase all of the birds out of everywhere.
Right.
And he smoked the track. He had this most phenomenal track, and he did great in the water. Mm-hmm. 7 days later, almost to the hour, we did a natural ability test, and he pointed flawlessly. He had the best field search I'd seen. I mean, he was 6 months old, and I was like, holy cow. I had always told myself, I'm like, just enjoy yourself. There's no pressure. There's no stress. Like, who knows what the wheels come off the bus at the test all the time. Everybody, there's like a ton of energy. Everyone's amped up. Yeah. But I walked out of that field portion, and I was already counting my fours. I was like, I have got a prize one 112 puppy right here, because he smokes the track and he's so good at the water. Like, this is like I was cashing the check. And I will tell you right now, that puppy who the week before had done the world's best track completely blew it off. He ran everywhere. At one point in time, the senior judge was stopped yelling at me to control my dog and was chasing after Gravy, telling him that was enough. Right? Like, that is just enough. Stop it. This is terrible behavior. And I was laughing so hard because I had counted up my score, man. I was like, holy cow. Like, dude, if he even comes close to what he did last weekend on the track in the water, like, we are solid gold, man. We got a 112. We got a prize one puppy, 6 months old. Ching, ching. It's famous, right? And he just, like,
he blew it.
He blew it. And then we got to the water and I had to gang tackle him to get him out of the pond. Mm. Like, it was just like, what is this? And so I just think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you can prep and you can practice and you do all your things, but it should never be stressful. It should never cause you heartache. Go set birds at a natural ability test. Like, do it. Just go set birds someday at a natural ability test. Bring your binoculars, get your old long eyes out, stand on the back of your pickup truck and watch those puppies lose their mind in the field portion, because there were plenty of puppies. Like, we had all these great, I have a great chapter. Like, we have a really great chapter here, in Central Oregon with some really phenomenal human beings that do it. And we did three tests this year, which is a lot of tests. We had three test days, which our board decided to do to help people catch up on just the COVID stuff. And so we do a puppy day, a training day, the 2 weekends prior to every test. So I had seen a lot of the puppies that eventually ran over the course of the summer at these puppy training days. Mm-hmm. And like, some of them, you're just like, oh yeah, you're going to have a great day. Like, this puppy's just amazing. And then they show up at the test, and whether it's the nerves, there's a ton of dogs around, there's a lot of waving, there's all this sort of stuff. And you just be like, I mean, there were a couple of people I was just heartbroken for because their puppies just lost their minds.
Sure.
And, you know, and then so puppies that showed up really great. And so it's just one of those things where, like, go set Chucker at a test and then just know that, especially the natural ability, like, you can't get wound up about it. You just got to go out there and have a good time.
Yeah.
it's just a good time.
You brought up a good point too. Like, go out there and volunteer before you actually run your dog so that you can see how the wheels can fall off, but just really understand the test. Cause I think a lot of people go into it that haven't either been to a test before, but especially haven't helped at them, because that's a huge learning experience.
Well, and it's also where you meet a lot of people. Like, mm-hmm. with the exception of Melissa, who I, you know, I found and worked with, all of the rest of the people that I've trained with, I've met at tests. Like, I've met at tests and I've met at those training days. Like, the crew, we had a really solid crew this summer of folks that were testing, that, you know, that were training together, all different levels. Like, we had one friend that was working his way to the Invitational. He went to the Invitational this fall. Another friend that got a utility prize won this spring, and so is planning on the Invitational next fall. A bunch of puppies, a bunch of dogs that are somewhere in the middle. And I met them all at the NAVDA tests and the training days. And then, you know, just like, oh, hey, yeah, let's, what are you doing next weekend? Like, you want to, oh, you like, yeah. Oh, we'll grab some leftover birds or do whatever. And so, you know, if you're new to this community, go to those tests and go to those puppy training days. They're awesome.
Introduce the Muppets. Those of us on Patreon can see them, but the other ones we're hearing about them. So how did the other two come into your life?
My world's best bird dog is 13 this year. As much as I hated to admit it, I needed to get another bird dog coming up. And so Kelly, my initial breeder, his stud had bred a female back east, and he'd put his earmark on a pair of puppies from them, a female for him to keep and then a male that he wanted, you know, somewhere out in the West. And so I snagged the male, and that's Gravy. And then the little female, who's Gravy's sister, is Sky. So she belongs to my friend Kelly. But we just did a month long road trip, bird hunting road trip. Mm-hmm. And so I had definitely needed a little more dog power, and having had Sky around when she was little, cause I flew out to the East Coast to get him, I really liked her. And so Kelly was gracious enough to lend me Sky for my big trip. And no, I just haven't given her back yet. But they're super cute, and they don't look as similar as they first did. Gravy's grown a little bit longer and leaner than Sky. And so they don't look like quite the identical twins that they did in the beginning when, you know, up until about a month and a half ago, like you almost couldn't tell them apart.
They still look clearly like siblings to me, though, at least. So.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But it was even more like yeah. Gravy's nose is lengthened out a little bit. He kind of looks like, I was looking at him the other day and like, you know that the remake of The Magnificent Seven, and Ethan Hawke plays this character called Goodnight Robichaud, yes. Whatever. Yes. And he's kind of got that, you know, kind of thin
mustache and crustache and
yeah. Yes. And he's kind of gaunt looking. Yeah. That's kind of what Gravy looks like. like you look like Goodnight Robichaud. And so I still have the litter mates and I call them the Muppets. And they have been just a hoot, like just really, really fun to work with. It's just, it's so interesting because on so many levels, they're very, very similar. Like they both have a very similar toolkit that they came with as far as they both have these phenomenal noses, like really phenomenal noses, but it's very interesting to see how they put them to use differently. Sky is really thoughtful. Almost to the point of at times being cautious, like little dog. And she's like a thinking man's bird. You can see her kind of putting it together. Mm-hmm. And Gravy I think he's got a little bit better build and he covers ground a little bit better. And so he just runs full out.
As hard as he can. Yeah.
With his nose in the wind. And he hasn't gotten to that point in time where he started. I mean, I think he's putting some stuff together. Like he knows to go kind of look at objects, right? Like, so if there's a spot where the cover changes, he knows that he should go there and kind of spend a little bit of time there. Mm-hmm. Like he's finding birds based on his legs, and he does find a lot of birds. He had a bang up day yesterday. He really had a bang up day yesterday. He did a really good job bird dogging yesterday, but like, Sky is just a little bit more thoughtful. Like the last test that we ran, we cleaned the field with the Muppets. Gravy was on point and Sky ran right in front of him and blew up his bird. Hmm. Just like that.
Sure.
And probably like 5 minutes later, there was a very similar scenario. Gravy's on point and Sky came like in view of it and she stopped. And she stopped and she started cruising in real slow. And she was like, okay, there's something going on here. And then she hit that scent cone and she just stopped like that. Like, cause she does that a little bit more where she's like, wait a minute, I've seen this before. And so it's just really interesting to see how I think they're both going to be really phenomenal little bird dogs and they have the sweetest personalities and they're really great, but they have a very similar toolkit, but they just really apply themselves very differently, which is really interesting.
Yeah. And how old are they now?
They just turned 11 months old.
How did bird dog like the Muppets coming into his life?
Oh, he hates them. Oh God, he hates them. He has enough manners to know that he's not allowed to eat the puppies.
Yeah.
But his his distaste for them is palatable in the house.
Okay.
And, you know, and I think, I mean, he tolerates Sky a little bit better. She's a little bit more deferential to him, but he hates Gravy. And it's because he knows who Gravy is. He knows Gravy's his replacement. Yeah. He knows that he is not... that he can't cover the ground anymore. He knows it. And it's obviously upsetting to him. It's really obviously upsetting to him. And he does hate Gravy. He really hates Gravy. He despises Gravy.
But they live in the same household together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you probably didn't notice it as much in the camper.
Not at all.
It's a little bit different, but like if you were here in the circle here, uh-huh. of what is the house, he really doesn't like, so I try really hard to do stuff. Like I always take him training with us. If I buy birds, I make sure that we shoot one for him. And what's been really nice is one of my training partners is taking his dog to the invitational next year. And so he needed a dog for honoring. Mm. and to work on honoring, and Bird Dog's really good at that. And so just making sure that like he's included. And so to be able to like, that really helped this summer with just his overall feeling about the Muppets, was to be able to go out there and be like, no, you're really vital. Like, we really need you here for this task. And then he would, you know, he worked the honoring, and then he got to do that. It makes him so happy to get to do that. I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but yeah, we just came back from this massive road trip, and that entire road trip started with a promise that I made to Bird Dog 7 or 8 years ago when I was in grad school, that we went to grad school in Montana. And so we're in Montana and we're in Billings, and everyone was like, oh man, you're going to hunt that dog. You got to take that dog to the Dakotas. And I was just broke and overwhelmed. And so I would just tell him, I was like, one of these days we'll go get roosters in the North Dakota. Like, we'll do this. And I just hadn't gotten to it. And we hunted last year. We had a great season, but the last couple of hunts, it was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to be able to hunt like that again. Talk about a phenomenal human being. The last checker hunt that Bird Dog ever went on, his original breeder, Kelly, carried him off the hill. He broke down and he was up on top of this big old checker hill, and he laid down and he wasn't moving, and was obviously in a lot of pain, and Kelly picked him up, threw him over shoulders, and hiked him out. And it was like, you know, as if I didn't already have enough respect and appreciation for that human being, like, to watch him walk off that mountain with my old dog over his shoulders was pretty big. And so it was just like, I was like, okay, like, if you made a promise, you better make good on it. And so early summer, I told the guys I worked with that I needed to take a month, and that I really needed to do this for Bird Dog. And then the old dog took a turn over the course of the summer, and his arthritis got so bad that, I mean, I didn't even think he was going to make it. I thought there was a time in August where I thought we were going to have to put him down. Like, he just was really suffering. But we switched up some pain meds and he rallied. And so we took off with the camper for 4 weeks to get out to North Dakota and shoot a rooster.
And you did.
And we did.
Tell us about that. Cause you had spent the first couple days in North Dakota, running the Muppets.
Yeah. You know, I actually, I wrote up a little thing on Instagram about it, and I printed it off to read it because I think it just pretty well encapsulates. It's, I guess some people will call it a poem. It probably is a poem.
Yeah. It tells the story.
Yeah. And I'm probably going to cry, so it's okay. But here goes. So it was called the study fort. It was where we spent nights and weekends, books stacked, note cards and papers tucked around, references and highlighters. The detritus of a master's program. The couch would be covered. And I would sit in the center, desperately trying to gain the words, concepts, and drug names. Beneath all of this, there was one, this best one. With a deep sigh, he would settle in, his black body curled tightly against my thigh. In moments of frustration or fatigue, I would reach under the papers, the books, seek out a silken ear. Rubbing it between my fingers, I would whisper, "Wild roosters in North Dakota. Wild roosters." He knows why we came here, has voiced his displeasure with the puppies pushing cover, with being left in the truck. He is anxious in the camper. It makes him clumsy. He falls. It hurts to see it. And he is embarrassed by the disappearance of his grace. But none of the spots have been right. He has never been one for self-preservation. It never used to matter. He always made it. But we must consider it. I must consider it. The morning went well. My shooting clean. Two pheasants and a hun in my bag. Three roosters makes a limit. So we head to a spot a friend knew. The kind of place stiff hips could wander. Down along some rows of corn. Through red-blue grasses. The breeze light behind us. We turned at the bottom of the corn, the wind now along our faces. Dropping his shoulder, he softens his step, begins to creep up through the stalks. I am behind him. He works to my right, his shadow in the corner of my eye, the sound of dry husk rasping along his body, then silence, the absence of movement, and a rustle low and to the left. One step. My shotgun lifts with the rooster. Keep your promises. Beatty finds the bird quickly. It was where it had fallen. He is grinning when he gives it to me. He knows why we're here. So, yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. I mean, there was, it's the entire trip is full of memory, but just to have completed that one thing, to just
the promises over the years.
All right? The promises over the years.
Yeah.
And I think he's special in a lot of ways that make, because of the way that he hunts, but that 7 years of going to school, and then even the first few years of practice, of like when I was out of school and like learning how to be a physician assistant, and I had a really tough job right off the bat. I worked in hospital medicine, so really sick people that are in the hospital, and it was hard, and I got ground up a bit, and I think that this is the thing that dog people know, is that thump of the tail, right? That when you step home after your day's labors, and there is that creature there that doesn't care, you know, whether they don't care about all of the rest of the stuff that's out there. They just want you, and they want to go for a walk, and they want to, you know, be with you. And I think, you know, that's like, I've had dogs my whole life, but training with a dog, because I didn't train him. We trained together, right? Like we went on that journey together, and we built each other together. We trained together, and that the depth of relationship that you get with that is beyond anything else. And so, you know, I would encourage anybody that has a dog, whether you have a hunting dog or, you know, a companion pet or whatever, to train with purpose, to find some task that the two of you can do together that isn't just kind of sit, stay, walk, behave, that has some purpose to it. Because that shared goal is really, I mean, there's a bond there that, I mean, that bond hauled me through some tough times. You know, there were just some days, you know, when I got home from work where I thought, oh my God, if this is the rest of my life, if this is what I signed up for, I just don't even think I want to do this. Like, I don't even think, you know, like, I don't even want to see tomorrow. And he'd be like, well, you think we should go see if we can chase a duck down by the river? We'll probably get arrested, you know? He's like, I bet there's a raccoon that needs drowned in. And there is a story about that.
There is.
You know, and so yeah, it's just like, oh my God, just so special, such a special creature, you know?
I mean, you both, I think I captured it, what you guys have going on, this just mutual adoration for each other. And it's just, it's a partnership.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, it's unlike any relationship of human to dog that I've ever seen before. It really is truly special.
Yeah.
And he is a once in a lifetime dog.
Yeah.
And I mean, we will eventually get more into some of the fun, amazing, naughty, interesting, unbelievable things that Bird Dog has done in the up to 13 years now.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty special dude.
He really is. He knows we're talking about him.
And my favorite thing is, share what you said with me about his appreciation for roadkill.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys know this or not, but the best time of year is the spring thaw.
Yeah.
When the roadkill's been under snow and it's been like festering and marinating in its own bacteria. And it becomes fetid carcass. And it is exceptional. It is exceptional. It is to be rolled in. It is to be consumed. It may even give you bloody diarrhea. And it will make you sick. It will make you so sick. And Bird Dog loves it so much. He loves it so much. And I just have to, I can't get too mad about it, because every once in a while I crawl into a bottle of whiskey and I feel like hell the next day. And he never judges me for it. Mm-hmm. He never judges me for it. And so he does love him some spring fetid carcass of roadkill. And it makes him sick and he feels ill, and I cannot judge him for it, because here I am Monday night about to top off my Basil Hayden, and he never judges me. Never judges me. He does observe a pretty strict bedtime. What time is it? It is, oh gosh, it's a little after 9. No wonder he's pacing around a little bit. He likes to go to bed at 8:50, and he does not like being kept up past 8:50. And so he does get a little judgy if you stay up past 8:50. But right. Yeah, that does explain, like, that's funny. Probably about 30 minutes ago was when he crawled out from underneath. Like, if we go back on the recording.
You're right.
I bet it was 8:50 when he came out from underneath the table, and he was like, okay, it is time for bed. It is 8:50. It's not 8:45. It's not 9:05.
He's the creature of routine.
Oh yeah. He likes to get up early, because that's when the squirrels are out. And he likes to go to bed at 8:50. So
let's talk a little bit more about your trip. So you had been planning this trip 4 weeks. Was it 4 weeks total trip?
It was a 4 weeks total trip. So I was off work 4 weeks. So trekker season had opened. I think trekker season opened, and then I had to go to work, and then I had the next weekend off. And then we went hunting that weekend here in Oregon again. And then I packed up and I headed, I actually went and met up with another really phenomenal wire hair breeder, a gentleman by the name of Jeff Funky, who runs Three Devils Kennels. Mm-hmm. And I hunted with Jeff a couple days in sort of it was far eastern Oregon. Like, basically it should have been Idaho. And we got into some hunts and some trucker, and we had a really good time. He'll forget more about a lifetime of wire hairs than I'll ever know. But yeah, we had a great time there. And then from there, I basically rallied out to North Dakota, and I had made contact via the magic of social media with a woman who lived out in southwestern North Dakota by the name of Emily. And so she gave me some pins and got me started. We met up for a hunt. She was the one who, like, I got out there and I was explaining to her why we were there. You know, I was like, oh, she's like, well, what do you want to hunt for? And I was like, you know, I mean, the puppies can run and do whatever the puppies want to do. It's great to get them on birds. I was like, but I'm really looking for a piece of ground where the brush isn't too thick. It's not going to get his legs all tangled up, where there's not too much coulee or, you know, kind of undulation that's going to be hard on his hips. I just need a chunk of flat ground, and I just need a willing rooster. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is a long held promise that really needs to be, you know, I need to close the gap on this. I need to get this done. And so I hunted with her. We got some ducks. We got a hun. We got some pheasants. I saw some sharp tail, but I never really got to hunt sharp tail, but that's definitely on a list of things that I want to get into. That looked like a lot of fun. And then it was about then that you reached out to me and you were like, hey, we should do a podcast. And I was like, podcast? We should just go hunting. You did. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what we would ever find to talk about on a podcast. I don't.
Well, Emily had what she messaged me, and she's like, hey, this Katie is out here. She's this badass chucker hunter from Oregon, and, you know, keep her on your radar of, like, women who really get after it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then like right after that, she sent me these photos. Bird Dog had just brought the retrieve to you.
Yeah.
And she told me a little bit about the story. And I, like, I'm just reading this and I'm sobbing.
Yeah.
And I go, is she crying in that photo? Because I'm crying. And she's like, oh yeah, we were all crying.
Oh God, we were sobbing. I was, when he came trotting back with that pheasant, I mean, and I will tell you, this is another thing for anyone who's starting out hunting, like invest in yourself, mm-hmm. pay someone to teach you how to shoot a shotgun. Because that was the other part of it is I have not knocked down a lot of birds for that old dog. He has pointed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of birds for me. And I have not been able to catch up to him and knock down birds for him, which was fine because he doesn't really like to retrieve. He likes to field search. So whatever. But I knew going into that trip, I was like, when that rooster rises, like if we get that opportunity and that rooster rises, like you better be able to keep your promises. You better be able to seal the deal. And so I took shooting lessons this summer and had a phenomenal coach and it made a huge difference. But yeah, when that, I don't remember shooting that rooster. I don't remember shooting that rooster.
Wow.
I remember hearing him stop. I remember hearing the rustle of the corn on his shoulder stop. And then hearing the rustle of the rooster in some cover in front of me. But I don't remember shooting it. I saw it fall and then saw him and then told him to fetch it. And he came back. But when he came back with that big old rooster in his face and it was like the feathers were up over his eyes like this. And I was sobbing my eyes out. I was a mess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was pretty
special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyhow. So then we decided to meet up.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm like, let's do a podcast. Like, oh, how about we go hunting? I'm like, oh yeah, even better. I had no idea you were off for another 3 weeks. So I'm like, yeah. So you headed over to Montana and you pulled in like in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah. I was like, oh man, I have so much work to do tonight. I'm like, but here I got to go pick up the kids from school, but here's a pin. Here's a couple pins to, you know, there's some rough grouse and dusky grouse, right in the back here, go get after them. And then you're like, oh, well the pin didn't come over. And so now there's like this worry of like, you know, did you get the pin? Like, does Onyx working on your phone? Is it not working on your phone? And I'm like, I don't know, but I got to go. I got to go get my kids.
Yeah. My ass, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to head out then. And
this sounds like a great place to give a shout out to our sponsor, Onyx Hunt. Hunt with confidence and find new opportunities using nationwide color-coded public land maps, private parcel ownership information, and clearly marked boundaries. Go to onyxmaps.com and find out why millions of hunters use and trust Onyx, the number one hunting GPS map.
It got dark. It was dark. It was an hour after dark and my husband got home and I'm like, oh boy. So she has an Onyx that doesn't have downloaded offline maps. She's got no mobile service. I didn't send her with bear spray. She's never been to this area before. Like, I didn't get any of her emergency contacts. And she's not back and it's after dark and now it's pouring rain and the roads had turned to
gumbo.
Yeah. And I'm like, I got to go back and find her. So I started driving around back on the mountain. I'm so pissed. I was so scared and I was so pissed at the same time.
Who's this crazy woman that just showed up?
I don't even know this one, but she may have been eaten by a bear. Her vehicle may have fallen off the mountain. I don't know. But it's now like 2 hours after dark and she's not back at my house.
It was not that late.
It was very late. It was definitely dinner was, yes, it was late.
It was 7:30 because it was okay. Not that late, but it was dark. It did get dark.
Yeah.
It did get dark and it had been raining. And in my defense, I thought, shit, you just showed up at this woman's house. She doesn't know you from Adam. And you just sort of foisted yourself on her and she's got these two little kids and you're taking off. You're going to take off for a week. you know, she should just have a nice dinner with her family. And so what had happened was I shot a grouse and it was great. And I got this grouse and I shot this grouse. I got back to my truck and it was just sort of this very nice Montana evening. And having grown up in the larch filled Western Montana, you know, mountains, it felt like home. It just felt like home. I could feel my dad sitting there. It just felt good. And so I did what I do most of the time. I popped a top and started plucking my bird. Just sat there on the back of my truck. Oh, and plucked that bird and drank that beer. And just was just grateful for the life and the world and the trees and the smell of the world, of the earth, you know, of like Montana was rising up in my nostrils. Sure. With this, you know, like this whole thing. And
yeah,
then, you know, got on the road and it was just as squirrely as I remember Montana roads being. And I was like, oh, it's like being in high school and like coming home from the kegger. And like, I come squirreling off this hill. And I kind of get down towards this intersection. I see the set of lights and they're kind of backing up and turning around. And I'm like, what the hell? I was like, God, I was like, man, these road hunters are out late. And then like, I kind of screamed past it. And I was like, ah, that kind of looked like Courtney's truck that I saw that one time. And I stop. And the look on your face when you pulled up next to me, I was like, oh, you were like, where the hell have you been? I was like,
yeah, ah. Well, you're sucking in nature's earthlings through your nostrils. I'm like puffing them out going, where the hell is this woman?
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I was just drinking a beer and plucking my bird.
You
and
you were like, totally I said that.
You were like, I hate you. But I also really like you, but oh my God. And then I was like, oh shit. Like, I'm sorry. Like I felt bad. This is the trouble with being single for 42 years, which is where I'm at. And that is that you just kind of get used to like, as long as I got the dog in the truck, I'm fine, you know? And even my mom has gotten to the point where I'm sure she still worries about me, but she just kind of knows that I'm okay. And it was a good reminder that I should let people know where I'm going. And like,
I just felt totally responsible for sending you in the middle of nowhere without any protection for anything.
Yeah.
But I did. Like, I hate you, but I also kind of love you right now, but I more hate you right now. So let's go back to the house and eat some dinner.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had a delicious dinner.
We did.
I hung out with your wonderful children who I just love to pieces.
Oh, and you won their hearts because you bring in a brown paper bag with a crop of your bird and that they got to help you dissect and figure out all the fun contents in there. So they're like, oh, I love Katie.
Oh, I thought it was the piggies and the reading stories with six different voices. I thought that's what I
got. Yeah. And like, that was the first time Blair's ever had pigtails. And what has it been 3 weeks now since that day?
Yeah.
And she asks for piggies every day. Thank you, Katie Willis.
Excellent. 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 So then we met up and then we took off we hunted for grouse that morning and we saw some, but we didn't catch up to any. Mm-hmm. And then we left to go where we had never really gone before.
Yeah. Well, before we left, we got back and my husband had been out training dogs.
Okay. And
let's just add in a bird dog story while we're in the mix of it.
Yeah. We went hunting and we took the two Muppets and we left Bird Dog
Bird Dog in the camper.
And he clearly heard William load up some pigeons that he must have shot. I bet you he was shooting over that puppy.
Yeah.
And Bird Dog knows the score. He knows what loading pigeons up sounds like and he knows what training pistols sound like. And he broke out of the camper. And William had three traps set out and was working the second trap and looked up. He's like, that old black dog just loosened that camper. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, Well, he found a pigeon in a trap, and I was like, what? And he, Bird Dog had broken out of the camper and had gone up on top of the hill and was staunchly pointing a pigeon in a trap for William. Look, I found it, sir. That puppy doesn't know what they're doing.
I got your bird here.
I got your bird right here. Feel free to shoot at your leisure, sir.
He didn't run away. He just went over and went on point.
Yeah. You know, he did that this summer. We were out doing a drill. He jumped out of the pickup truck window and came racing out to the drill. It was really funny because we had been talking about how you teach a dog to honor. And he came screaming around this juniper. And the dog that was supposed to be working was on point. And we were trying to do, I think, a covey flush to keep her steady for a covey flush. And he came ripping around that juniper. And the second that he saw her, he just locked up and he honored her.
Wow.
It was like, how do you teach him to do that? And I was like, I didn't teach him a damn thing about honoring. I never taught him honoring. I never did. It was never a drill that we did. He figured that out all on his own. But yeah, so he loves the game, man. He loves it. He just, it's his bones, man.
It's awesome.
He almost drowned this summer. We went out after a test to the pond that they did utility in, and there was a duck out there, and he almost drowned in that pond. And he got the duck and then got tangled up in the weeds and was on the way back. And I had to go out there and get him. And I'm carrying him back in my arms, and he has that duck. I was like, oh my God. And his tombstone will read, still a 4 in the duck search.
Forever.
Forever.
We headed to Idaho.
Yep. Headed into Idaho.
Nowhere, didn't really know where we were going.
I had guided out there, so I had kind of a little bit of familiar river guided out there. Mm-hmm. And we drove down deep into a canyon, found a really pretty fantastic campsite.
Oh man, that was
a nice campsite.
Best. It was the best. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we did what you do when you checker hunt, and that's we hiked until we vomited.
Basically
hiked until we vomited.
Mm-hmm.
We did find some quail, but we had puppies with us. And so they just did a really great job of scattering quail. But yeah, then we moved camp and found a different spot and poked around a little bit more and got into some grouse. And we saw one chucker. We saw that one chucker. He was so lonely. he was so lonely.
You're like, because I'm like not, you're a. Like, you pretty much just solely chucker hunt, right? In Oregon? In quail?
I mean, well, this is the first year I've gone grousing, and I have gone grousing. Okay. I do love me some jump shooting ducks, man.
Okay.
People always talk about, like, my dogs always have a great heel. And the reason that my dogs have a great heel, I teach the puppies to heel before they know how to sit. Because if you want to jump shoot ducks, you better have a dog that heels under all conditions.
Mm.
And that's like, so you gotta, yeah. So I love jump shooting ducks. But I do think, like, now that I've hunted a few different species, I will tell you that pheasant hunting is definitely the sport of kings. That is a gorgeous bird. I cried every single one that I shot. I've never seen anything as glorious and gorgeous as a pheasant. I've never really wanted to get a bird stuffed or mounted. And I'm getting that bird that Bird Dog got
stuffed and mounted. Good for you. That's awesome.
That was a nice rooster he got and some good old spurs on it.
Nice.
But holy cow, that bird is fantastic. And oh my gosh, what a hoot grousing is. Grousing is, oh man, I love grousing.
It's a good time.
You cannot beat a bang up quail hunt. I really wanted to get you in on a bang up quail hunt because you can burn through 2 boxes of shells in a heartbeat on a quail hunt, and you will just like,
yeah, I've never been quail hunting. So, but
if I could only hunt one bird, it would be chucker.
Mm-hmm.
It would be chucker.
You're in a very elite group of people that may say that.
Yeah.
It's tough.
You're talking about a person who learned to ski when she was 24, became a ski patroller when she was 26, went through PA school. I learned to play hockey when I was 38, like never having skated before. Like I've done a lot of hard things.
Yeah.
But I will tell you right now, there is nothing as hard or as humbling as trucker hunting. And it just like, we got outfoxed this weekend. I got a chucker this weekend, but those birds, they had our number. We had some great dog work. The dogs worked really phenomenal. You have to have a really top-notch dog to chucker hunt, because they have to be able to like watch the birds move. They have to almost on some levels become a bit of a border collie. Like a really good chucker dog will see where the birds are and that they're running, and it will move to them. Like I have seen bird dog go on point on a side hill and then back his ass up out of his point, take off running on a big cast around to come up over the top of a hill and come down on top of birds that were running uphill.
Wow.
Because if he would have stayed here, they would have run up to the top and they fly off the other side.
Right.
And so he's not the only chucker dog I've ever seen do that.
Yeah.
Like to really, you have to have really phenomenal dog work, because chucker, they're so damn wily and they're so hard to shoot. And this year's been especially hard because we're in this huge drought. And the cover is sparse. I mean, they can see you. They can see you come in. They can see the dog silhouetted on the skyline. And they were getting up so wild. They were getting up so wild, so far out in front. I mean, little old Gravy, he kind of came into his own. He was points. He had some really nice points on birds that were, by the time I got there, were 40 to 60 yards in front of him. And, you know, they were running and he didn't chase them.
Nice.
Which was a huge thing. I was like, oh, extra biscuits for you, buddy.
Right.
But chucker hunting is hard. And I think, you know, I think it's this thing of like, we live in a culture that's very good at compartmentalizing. It's really good at putting us in these boxes and putting our lives in these boxes. This is my work box. And this is my family box. And this is my, you know, my exercise box, and this is my spirituality box. And these are all of the different things that I do. And I keep everything very neat and tidy. And that's shit. Like, it's all like, if you know what a person is like at work, you kind of know what they're like outside of work. And you can kind of see these different things. And so I think we should cultivate that. And I love chucker hunting because it's hard, because I want to quit, because every single time I look at a hill and I think, oh, I'm never going to get to the top of that thing. Like, this sucks. My legs hurt. Like, I can't do this. And then I get to the top of it and I'm like, oh, I made it. Mm-hmm. And then Monday morning rolls around and I have a really, really challenging patient. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get through this? And then I'm like, hey, guess what? Remember, you can do hard things. You can do really hard things. You did really hard things yesterday. Remember the hard things you did yesterday and you didn't think you could do them? Guess what? You did them. So buck up, buttercup. Like, yeah. Let's go. You can do hard things. And I think that, you know, like there's, to me, that's really just like to push yourself and find yourself that edge of where you think that you've got nothing left. Like, is this the end of me? Is this the last that I have? Do I have any more to give? And sometimes you're like, yeah, this is it. And then you take one more step and you're like, well, I guess it wasn't. And one more step, you know?
It's tough. It definitely is.
It is.
Talk about a little bit about some of the things like that we went through going to an area that we had never hunted. We weren't sure. I think a lot of times, whether it's people are new to it, trying to figure out how to learn to hunt or where to hunt, what to look for. I mean, we went through all those things. And while it felt like several times we may have been defeated, I don't think I've ever learned so much.
Yeah.
As I did like each day, just finding out something new and different from the experiences that we had.
Yeah.
You know, like when we're like, oh, we go this long way and this whole area had all burnt up.
Yeah.
You know, months prior, and we're like, oh, there's no birds here. It's all burnt up.
Yeah.
And then we're sitting there on the tailgate having a beer.
Bit of a theme there, but that's, you know, like, I think so. So there was this thing, and just, I'm going to tell a story and I'm just going to start this up. I do not endorse smoking. I work in pulmonology. Smoking is bad. But when I used to river guide, there was a guy who was our trip leader and he used to roll cigarettes, and invariably things would go wrong. And the thing about when things go wrong on a river trip is that you're far away from everything, right? Like you're on day two of a 5-day river trip. Yeah. If you forgot to buy bread, that's it. And he would, when something like that came up, he would stop, go down to the river, roll himself a smoke, and come back like 5-10 minutes later. And it never really cost us anything. And I remember I was like 21, 22 years old. And I was like, oh my God, we got to figure this out. Like, what's going to happen? It's an emergency. And he would just walk down there and come back, and something would have revealed itself. And so I do think, whether it's the metaphorical cigarette that you roll, or whether it's a beer on the tailgate, or whether it's just sometimes I just sit down and I find myself a rock and I just eat a piece of jerky, right? Like, but something, when you get to that place where you're like, what the, you gotta just sit down, put your mind on something else, and allow you to reopen, because we get tunneled in, right? Like we had this vision of what we wanted to accomplish. We were going to go chucker hunting. We had stopped at the beach. We had looked at all the maps. We'd looked at the Onyx maps. We looked at my paper maps. We went to the BLM. We talked to the BLM. We looked online. We did all these sorts of different things, and we drove down this ass road into this canyon. And we get down there and we're looking across this massive river at the most beautiful trucker country that you've ever seen.
Oh my gosh.
And behind us is black dirt. It's just black dirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the whole way down, we were like, oh, there's gotta be some grouse in here or something like that. And so it was like, oh, well, let's go back up and grouse. And so we'd driven up, and then we'd had a really frustrating little grouse hunt, like because of the fire. The lumber had come, you know, the burned logs had come down into this creek. It had choked it out. You couldn't walk through it. It was just miserable. And we were at this spot where you're just kind of like, I don't know what it's like to be a man. I've never been a man. I don't get to live the male experience, but I've lived the female experience. And there are times where I'm like, where I go out on my own to do my own thing in the thing that I'm not super familiar with. And I get skunked, or I don't meet with success. And there's this little niggling, voice in the back of my head that's basically like, well, if you'd gone with the fellas, or this is why you're supposed to, you know, this is why you're not supposed to do things on your own. And it gets you, it kind of gets you right, you know, right there. And so to sit down on the tailgate of a truck, and like, when I get that way, I'm just like, I'm just going to sit down. I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to crack this beer. I'm going to eat this jerky. I'm going to write, you know, in my little journal, I'm going to do something that's different from what I'm doing. And I'm just going to let the world reopen itself to me, because something will appear. Something always appears. And the thing of it is, and you know, we talked about it a little bit, is like, you know, you look at the Instagram and you follow people who hunt, and holy cow, they have bang up weekends all the time.
Yeah.
But I bet, yeah, they don't. They only send pictures of when they have bang up weekends. And there's not that sort of like, I went to a new place, I didn't know where I was going, and I got skunked. But, you know, but then we're sitting there on the tailgate, and here comes this side-by-side buggy with these really cool people in there, and they just stop and start talking to us. And we learned so much about where we were, and we went back down and we started poking around a little bit more and doing some more exploration. We saw our one chucker. I found a ton of chucker poop, which I wouldn't have thought that we would have found down there. We got some other beta. We decided the next day to come at it from a different direction. We ended up shortchanged on time, where it was just kind of like, yeah, that's a bigger drive than we need to do to get down to those spots.
And I was afraid of falling off the cliff.
Well, so yeah, that's true. The next time we go, I'll drive. I'll tell you that one road that I got stuck out on, you would have walked. You would have not liked it. Oh my gosh, it was so greasy. I was like, oh, come on, Sylvia, stay on the mountain, Sylvia. It was like the road was going this direction and we were typewritering down the road with everything that we had because gravity kept trying to roll the whole truck into the ravine. And we were just like in four low, just like,
oh my gosh.
It was so bad. Bird Dog got out of the front seat and got in the back seat and like was in the back seat with his head down. And he never does that. But he was like, I don't want to see us die. We're all going to die.
He's a very smart dog. Have we mentioned that? I haven't seen roads like that though. I mean, since I spent a semester in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And that was scary, but like these were scary.
I think that's another really important point to bring home is that when you go out with people, you have to listen to where people feel like being, because that's where you have a really nice time. Discretion is the better part of valor. You will, it's like, I was telling you this, it's like the single thing that you can do to increase your safety in avalanche country and the backcountry is to have a woman in your group, because it checks a little bit of that. And so, you know, like that's just another thing, like when you're putting a group together is like, you got to listen to what other people have to say. And if they don't like the road and they don't want to drive down the road, well, then don't go down that road, because you can turn around and you can go grousing and you can have a great time. And you could shoot a limit of grouse unless you had Gravy with you, who was hellbent on pushing every grouse in Idaho. Gravy was hot off a pheasant-filled North Dakota trip, and he could not contain himself. He was having a good time.
But look what the weather did to us unexpectedly, right? Like, it started to downpour rain, and then it got so foggy that you couldn't see more than 5 feet in front of you, like, just all of a sudden. And if we had been on the road, that could have been super scary. But I that was the second time I lost you for the weekend.
Oh yeah. But then you remembered the lesson. And before you started freaking out, what did you do?
I sat on the tailgate, opened a beer and started plucking my bird.
And then what happened? I just showed up.
And then you appeared.
Through the mist.
Through the mist. All of a sudden I hear Marco and like, Polo. And I hear, yes.
Yes, we got it. Gravy, come on this way.
Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
So, you know, you just got to get out there and I was thinking about the same way as like, you know, I have a couple of girlfriends that want me to teach them how to pluck birds. Mm-hmm. And I was like, And I love plucking birds. Like, I haven't really ever done it before. I've always just breasted because everyone told me it was easier, but I was always like, oh, maybe plucking birds is good. And then I've had a couple of friends show me how to pluck birds.
Yeah.
And it's so easy and it's not hard. And it's like, especially if you do it on the tailgate when they're warm and they're fresh, it'll take you 10 minutes to pluck a bird. It does not take that long. But like one of my friends was like, she's like, well, I'm always worried that I'm going to mess it up. And I was thinking about it and I was like, well, what happens if you mess up plucking your bird? You just skin it and breast it anyway, right?
Right, like, right.
Like, and I think that there's that whole, you know, like when I first started hunting, I didn't shoot a lot because I wasn't certain that I had the shot. And then I was out with Kelly and he was like, good Lord, woman. Like, I want to hear lead flying. And of course, now we know it should be steel, but right.
Like, or copper plated bismuth.
But he was just like, he's just like, for God's sake, just shoot. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of that, like, you know, you're new to something, you want to do the right thing, you want to do it, and just get out there and do it. Just go, just go. I mean, do it within reason, you know, make sure somebody knows where you're going, make sure that you've got, you know, like good tires on your truck and that you've got enough water and that you have a snack, you know, those sort of basic things. But like beyond that, like you should just go. You should just always go because you may not get what you're looking for, but you'll find something that has value. You'll get something out there and you'll know more than you did before you started. And it will be worthwhile, you mm-hmm. know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that going to be your best advice for a novice hunter?
My best advice for a novice hunter is to find a mentor. Mm-hmm. That would be for my straight up best advice for a novice hunter would be to invest in yourself, find a mentor, go to a class, like invest in yourself and invest in your enrichment. And then just go and, you know, and go on little trips and go on short trips and poke around in your own backyard. But like, you know, I've lived in my vehicle on several occasions, sometimes because I didn't have another option and sometimes by choice. And this is a big, big, beautiful country out there with a million things to look at. And any opportunity that you've got to get out there, get gone and go look at something, you should do it for certain.
Mm-hmm.
It's always worthwhile.
I'm on the list of things to ask you now. Your bucket list hunt. What's your bucket list hunt?
I want a limited chucker. I have never shot a limited chucker. And I'll tell you right now, I want a limited chucker.
Okay.
And I can't decide which I want more, a limited chucker or a double. I feel a double coming. Okay. Like I just have, my shooting has improved and I've had a couple of occasions where I've missed my first shot, but I have, instead of shooting twice at the same bird that I missed the first time, I have had the wherewithal to like take a shot at a bird, miss because either I couldn't catch up to it or it was too far away, and change and shoot a second bird and get that second bird. And I feel like that's a gateway to a double. Hmm. I feel like that's a gateway to a double. And I would really like to shoot a double.
Yeah.
But I really want to, I want a limited chucker. I want a limited chucker. I really wanted a limited chucker over my old dog. And that's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's still got some legs in him. And I think we're going to get into some good Eastern Oregon quail hunts. And so maybe a limited quail over him would be pretty
okay.
fun. Because it helps to have a steady hand on a quail hunt. And he is definitely a steady hand. But yeah, so that's what I would say there.
Awesome. What about your favorite piece of gear?
My favorite piece of gear.
Yeah.
And I can't count a pocket full of Twix and Milky Ways because that's definitely
no.
I don't eat candy bars any other time of the year, but my dad always allowed hunting.
Yeah.
Like we never had candy in the house, but you could have candy in the house during hunting season, and he was a Snickers man and I always got Milky Ways because I don't like peanuts in my candy bars. And I will say that's one thing I carry in my vest. It's a little sentimental, but I've got a Snickers bar in my vest on the off chance I ever run into that guy. And I
aww.
Could just be like, here you go, Dad. I got your Snickers bar for you.
I love that.
Because I think he's out there in the woods somewhere. He just has to be. Favorite piece of gear. I mean, besides the bird dog, I do love the bird dog, but he's not gear.
Your go-to.
My go-to piece of gear. I mean, I love my shotgun. I love my shotgun. Mm-hmm. And I've loved my shotgun a lot more since I got it fitted to me.
Perfect.
Sophia Le shotgun is probably, I do love Sophia. I do.
How long ago
Sophia.
Did you get it fitted?
So I had an inch taken off last year during hunting season after the fact that it was an inch too long for me almost cost me my thumb. And that helped a lot, but I had it properly fitted this summer when I took lessons. And it was pretty phenomenal because I would say that there was a 50% improvement in my shooting before he ever gave me any instruction in shooting once Eric fit my shotgun. Mm. It made that big of a difference. I cannot believe the difference having a shotgun fit you mm-hmm. makes. And so I would say that invest in yourself, find a certified instructor, get your shotgun fit to you, take a lesson, because you spend a lot of money and a lot of time getting your dogs ready. You need to be there. And I regret, mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of regrets in my life. I have very, very few regrets in my life. I will always regret that I did not invest in my shooting for my dog, for my once in a lifetime dog before this season. Mm-hmm. That will always be hard for me to realize how easy it was to so significantly improve my shooting and I didn't do it. And that's big.
I think a lot of people could probably say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not realize it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not do anything about it. That's
Yeah.
If you were to add another breed, we already know that you're a white hair snap.
I want a field cocker. I want a field cocker. I want one of the little dogs. I want the little dog with the I want the little dog.
Great. Gravy's like, so do I.
When I'm too old to run checker hills, and I am too old to wrestle wire hairs, I will have a fleet of field cockers like the Queen of freaking England has corgis. And they will be naughty and they will be on all the furniture. And if people come over, I'll just be like, don't you bother my little dogs. And that's my next bird dog. I'm going to get a fleet of field cockers when I'm an old lady.
A fleet of field cockers. You'll be the crazy cocker lady.
Right? Better than being the crazy cat lady.
That's true. Oh my gosh. All right. Your favorite game bird recipe.
I love chucker pot pie.
Ooh.
I love chucker pot pie. And it's best with the breast. So you make the breasts into your chucker pot pie. And I like to do sort of like, it gets a little heavy with taters. So I use like white beans and like some chard, a little pancetta.
I don't even know what pancetta is.
It's fancy ass bacon.
It's way off. It sounds like it should be a spice.
Yeah. No, pancetta is some fancy ass bacon.
Okay.
And then the legs, I like to batter and fry and dip in some sort of dipping sauce. They're really good that way. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I got a lot of good recipes. I started smoking meat last year and I made some goose breast pastrami that was really good. And so I'm super excited to experiment a little bit more with that sort of stuff and try some different cured options with game birds. But I love to cook. So it's pretty, I think with most game birds that I've found, it doesn't take much to make any recipe work with them. I did recently start doing a brine on all of my game birds of just a 50-50 kind of a sugar. I eyeball it depending on how much bird I have, a 50-50 sugar and salt brine. And you just put it in like a Ziploc bag, put a bunch of water in it, mix it up so that it's, you know, all in solution, you know, so there's no grains left, and then put your birds in there for like 24 hours. And it's kind of interesting. So what you really want to do is like the dryness and the toughness comes from the moisture leaving the meat as the, you know, like you want to break down the collagen and the fibers in the meat, but you don't want to lose that moisture. And that's kind of something that happens a lot. And so when you use salt and that sugar, that salt and sugar draws, it helps with the collagen breakdown, but then as that gets soaked into the meat, it pulls moisture with it back in, like through osmosis, sort of like that active transport of things
from a higher concentration to a lower concentration through a semi-permeable membrane.
Exactly.
There's that biology degree just happened.
Yeah. See, that's value added. But yeah, so stuff like that can really help. And then like, I know a lot of people with like waterfowl find it too strong, you know, and I will say the smoking of the goose breasts and making goose breast pastrami, it became very mild. It was very, very delicious. But like, if I just have a couple duck breasts or something like that, that I'm working with, I'll usually soak it in milk for like 12 to 24 hours. And that seems to take some of that game out. Although I will say I had a little teal last weekend that I did the brine on and just put it straight on the grill with the salt and pepper. And it was so damn good. It was so damn good.
You're a great cook. You definitely spoiled me while we were out. Like, we went grocery shopping. Like, I got my norm. I got my things that I take that I fit in my cooler or in the back seat of my truck. And that's bread, butter, bologna, peanut butter, and jelly.
Yeah.
And usually eggs. Forgot my eggs at home.
Yeah.
And bacon and coffee. And that's what gets me by. And with you having the camper benefits, you had some meals every meal.
Oh yeah.
And we SpaghettiOs. Ate well. I brought SpaghettiOs and meatballs, which were pretty amazing.
They were like, when we came back from being absolutely soaked to the bone, I mean, it was, we could have potentially been less wet on that grouse hunt if we had gone swimming in our clothes. Like, we were wet. And like, to get back to the camper and throw two cans of SpaghettiOs on the stove and house those, it was great.
You had two warm robes too. So I'm like, let's just strip down, wear our robes, and eat SpaghettiOs to lunch.
Just crush some SpaghettiOs. And it's like raining on top of the camper. Yeah, awesome. that was pretty special. Yeah, it was really good. I don't want this day to ever end.
I know. I'm like, it's two. I gotta go. We've already had a beer by now.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it was good. Give us something in the raw that we should know.
That we should know. My phone's about to run out of batteries.
That's good. All right, quick. How can listeners connect with you?
Listeners can connect with me. I'm on the Insta at Travelin' Pup, but I spelled it wrong. Just so you know a little bit about me. I like to travel, but I'm not a very good speller. So it's TRAVLENPUP. That's it. I do some writing. And so there's a link to a blog there with some stuff that I have not updated long enough. It's been a long time since I updated anything on there. If listeners want to connect with me that way. And I would just say, you know, there is plenty of room at the table for everybody. If you want to be outside and you want a different look at the world and you see the people that are out doing the things, just go and ask them. And if you ask someone to help you be in the outside and they say no, or they're not nice to you, you didn't want to know them anyway, and just try again and talk to somebody else, because most people are really, really nice. And most people really want more people to like hang out with and rally around with, because it's funner at the end of the day to sit around a campfire and shoot the with your bros and tell a story about your crazy ass dog or some amazing shot that you made or some cool thing that you saw. Because every time you go out there, there's going to be something that you've never seen before. Every single time there's something you're never going to see before. And it's amazing. And then probably the most important thing of all time is never turn your back on an old wire hair. Because they will always get in trouble. Never turn your back on an old wild hair. Don't do it.
And if you do, it leaves us for a whole new bonus series that we were going to be starting. We're going to be sharing whiskey and wild hairs, because the stories of this dog, the legend Bird Dog, need to be told. They need to be in this vault. Out on the interweb, accessible for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because he's got some good things that he would like the world to know about he's done.
He's definitely proud of himself. He's definitely proud of himself with some of his, the skunking, you know, those sorts of things that you really can just hang your hat on as lifetime achievements. Mm-hmm. So.
All right.
Well, excellent.
Well, stay tuned for those bonus episodes. And Katie, thank you so much for joining me and for reaching out and saying, let's not do a podcast. Let's just go hunting.
You should always go hunting. Always choose hunting.
Always choose hunting. Always.
Now that you've listened to this episode, you understand why I felt it necessary to add a bonus series of Katie and the Bird Dog's Excellent Adventures. Katie is so in tune with her dogs and such a talented storyteller. So stay tuned for some bonus episodes we dub Whiskey and Wild Hairs. If you're interested in the uncut video of this episode, more discounts, giveaways, and contents, sign up to be a member for $5 per month at patreon.com/thebirddogbabe. Check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast for all of your bird dog and hunting needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Onyx Maps, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283 Kennels. And please be sure to support the conservation organizations of the birds you're chasing after this season and the public lands in which you hunt. Have a great week, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving.